If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce someone who blends the best of both worlds, science and spirituality, into a harmonious journey of wellness. Meet Sarah Hutchinson, a remarkable individual who crafts her unique wellness wisdom recipe with one cup of Western science and one cup of time-tested wisdom. She adds a teaspoon of curiosity and 2 tablespoons of patience. Her secret ingredients? A sprinkle of poetry, a dash of story, and a hint of song. Together, these elements create a delightful blend that nourishes the soul. Let's dive into this enriching conversation with my cousin, Sarah, as she shares her insights and wisdom. Enjoy the journey. Hello, Sarah Hutchinson. Thank you for being here on our podcast today.
Hello, Victoria Hackett, my first cousin.
Yes, we are related. I'm so absolutely thrilled that you are here. So I invited you on the podcast because I have been following your work for some time now, and it's absolutely amazing. And as my cousin, I would love to actually hear your backstory and how you've come into the world of science and also spirituality. So I'll let you take over.
Beautiful. Well, I just want to preface this by saying we are in the same ancestral lineage, you. And the more I learn about the Hackett lineage, the more it makes sense that you would be doing what you're doing and I would be doing what I am doing. We're both educators, and we're both in service of something called the greater good. And I know our audience might be like, the greater good, whatever happened to that? I think perhaps you and I were both raised with some strong messaging about contributing. And this is not to say I'm some selfless contributor, but it's been wonderful for me to follow your work and see this same template of service. And then we find ourselves in the same stream because nature is the force, if you will, the presiding force that you and I are both in service of. And that's what our conversations are about our relationship with nature. How do we flow with the river of time and the cycles of nature to experience deep wellness, even when we're sick or injured? Yours is, how do we provide educators with the support to bring nature in as a teacher? I see such a similar desire on our parts to make the world a better place in this way.
So you're a trained nurse, and you've been a nurse for years.
Yep. I was born in New England. I now live in Western Colorado. I came out of, my mother died in the wool New Englander. That's the Hackett side. My father was a Midwesterner, the son of an industrialist. The way my father controlled his stress was by going out into nature. Specifically, he loved the ocean, and he loved to sail, and he loved the mountains, and he loved to ski. And I liked to get away from my siblings and hang out with my dad. So pretty early on, I was introduced to the pleasures and the pains of nature and nature as a teacher. My happy place was always going out into the woods. I experienced elementary school and high school in New England. I took a year off after high school. I begged my parents. They said, get into college and you can take your year off. And I immediately disappeared to sail across the Atlantic Ocean, which had been a lifelong dream of mine. Tremendous immersion in the power of nature and the humility and the glory and the fear, all of it there in that transatlantic voyage. I then got back and wanted to go to the mountains to explore. So I got a job in a donut factory in Waltham, Massachusetts, until I earned enough money to hitchhike across the country and join the National Outdoor Leadership School. Some of you will know it as NOLS, as a student in the Pacific Northwest. And I had a out-of-this-world experience with the big mountains, the glaciers, and nature. And dutifully went back to college for 2 years, and then I couldn't resist. I just wanted to be in outdoor environments. I finished 2 years of college. I was an education major. Quite frankly, I started to student teach in a public school, and I was very concerned because there wasn't enough interface with the world. I worried about students having to sit and be indoors all day, and there weren't a lot of opportunities for me to take them out and let nature do the job. I had to work too hard, so I left that and began full-time work as an outdoor educator in adventure settings with the National Outdoor Leadership School and Outward Bound. And some of you will be familiar with those schools. I loved it. And I realized a few years in, I didn't want to be a 40-year-old Outward Bound instructor with bad knees and no address. I knew that I wanted to have a family and continue to have the outdoors be a major part of my life. But I began looking around and stumbled into a job as a certified nursing assistant in between outdoor education courses in the dead of winter in Wyoming. And a registered nurse in that small hospital took me under her wing and said, "You should go to nursing school. You can do your outdoor lifestyle, and you're really good at this, and you don't get queasy when things are hard." I had been that child walking down the country roads of my childhood, and when there was a roadkill squirrel, I was the one with the stick poking to see the intestines and whatever else was revealed. So I came back to Boston. I went to nursing school. I was on my way to a nursing job in New Zealand, stopped in Colorado. Long story short, ended up running a rural ski area clinic in Crested Butte, where I was it. There was sometimes a physician there, often not. All manner of things. In the summertime, when there was no skiing, there were construction injuries, mountain biking injuries, precipitous childbirth, stitches to be stitched, et cetera, et cetera. So very seminal experience with both humans and nature. Then I had kids. Then I was kind of grounded. Then I got kind of stressed. So I started running. Then my hamstrings got really tight. Then I couldn't lean over very well, and I worried about my hamstrings. So then I went to yoga to lengthen my hamstrings, and I found that I had a profound experience of regulating my nervous system with yoga, and I got hooked on yoga. Not the hot, sweaty, jump-around kind. My teacher happened to be deeply grounded in what I call yoga and yoga beyond the poses. This idea that yoga is designed to keep us embodied and aware and allow us to move into the mind for meditation. Then, bonus, I discovered yoga had a sister science called Ayurveda. Ayurveda, the science of life, the wise science of life. And I got very interested in Ayurveda. I was working clinically as a registered nurse, and I love Western medicine, but there were some blank spots. Insomnia, anxiety, depression, these places where a pill for every ill doesn't always cut it. Ayurveda had beautiful frameworks for understanding these maladies, and I began to incorporate it in my practice, and the rest is history. I've continued then to weave the Western medical sciences that I am a child of in with the time-tested wisdom of Ayurveda that has with it, very naturally, you can't tease it out, a steady dose of what we could call spirituality, that there are greater forces at work. And when we join with them, that's a good thing.
Ah, it's beautiful. It's really interesting to merge the scientific piece and your nursing background and have nature sort of be in the middle, actually, and then this sort of spirituality piece. We have a lot of educators that are listening, a lot of educators that are working with young children. How would you recommend? What types of things can you say, even in terms of self-care for ourselves as educators and also to help educators teach children to regulate themselves? So that's a lot of different questions in one.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a beautiful rabbit stew and such a good question. And I want to start with educators. I want to start with the grownups. Even if you don't consider yourself a grownup, you get a paycheck, you're a grownup. And I learned this. I spent 15 years in a high poverty elementary school as a nurse and a social worker here in my small city, Grand Junction, Colorado. I was so grateful for my yoga background because yoga is the ancient science of the regulation of the nervous system. And I found I had learned to regulate my own nervous system, working 12-hour shifts as a critical care nurse, working in emergency medicine, all the places where the dysregulation can happen. So I first want to talk to the grownups, which is to say, I know you all have regulation practices for your nervous systems. Maybe you walk. Maybe you go to yoga. Maybe you dance. Maybe you cuddle with your pets. Maybe you meditate. Maybe you practice mindfulness. There are so many things available. If you have not yet found a way that you can reach your happy place, and you know you're in your happy place when you're sleeping reasonably well, when you're digesting reasonably well, when a door can slam and you don't jump out of your skin, when somebody can tick you off and you don't lose it, because you have inner steadiness. That's how you know your nervous system is reasonably regulated. It's all about what the Yoga Sutra calls equanimity. Mm. And for those of you who are teaching in classrooms, yes, please, equanimity, because you don't know what's going to come at you next. And you're in an environment where you are co-regulating. Some of you will know this terminology, and it's easy to understand. Right now, even though it's Zoom, Victoria and I are co-regulating. There's a field between us. It would be stronger if we were in person, but it still exists. Her regulation is affecting me, and mine is affecting her, and there is a collective field present. You know those good days when you're co-regulated with your kids, and that collective field is supporting learning and care and kindness. My daughter is an elementary school principal in a Title I school. I know how difficult each year. I have many friends who are educators. The dysregulation of our students is profound. All the more reason for us to practice self-regulation and do our darndest to share it with our kids and to develop good boundaries so our self-regulation doesn't get completely stripped away from us. Regular retreating is important. Don't hesitate to figure out ways to take time off.
Yes, 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 yes.
We've all been through that. Oh, I can't. The whole world will stop if I don't show up because nobody else will understand Johnny or Sally. Or I have to get that part of the curriculum finished. Sometimes there is a truth there. And yet the yogis call this svadhyaya, knowing yourself well enough to be going like, I'm kind of making that up because I don't know how else to operate.
Right. It's so, yes. And I think as educators, there's a piece of us that's caregiving. And again, if we don't give ourselves that time to explore what those happy places are, we all sort of know maybe it's being out in nature, because I know a lot of folks are doing that already. But to really retreat is such a beautiful message to send to all our educators and all our parents, even anybody that's working with children. So in your work, you're truly bridging the science with the spirituality and really doing that stream in terms of connecting it with nature. How do you use maybe some of these challenges that we have with children that are not regulated? How do you use these challenges as catalysts for growth?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a big, beautiful question. I want to get practical for a moment and give a couple of practical tips about this intersection of science and spirituality and the reality of being an educator. One is, if you don't already have a moon calendar, an M-O-O-N calendar, a way to reference the phase of the moon, I would invite you to do that.
Hmm.
There's a variety of ways you can access the phases of the moon. You can just do it on your computer. I personally like to buy a really gorgeous moon calendar from a company in the Pacific Northwest called WeMoon, and I love it. And the reason is this. What percentage of our body is water? Most of us know 60 to 80%. We are walking water sacks, one of my mentors likes to remind me. We're responding to the gravitational pull of the waxing and waning moon. Think about the tides, a neap tide and a full moon tide, for those of you who are children of the shore. You know how low the tide and how high the tide will become as the moon waxes, gets big, and wanes and gets small. Guess what? The fluid in our body is also responding to the moon. And you're not alone. All of those kids under your wings during the day are also their cerebrospinal fluid, let's be specific. The fluid that bathes the brain and the spinal column is responding to the magnetism of the waxing and waning moon. Very simply put, when we're building into the full moon, as we are now, the pressure is building. We're getting more excited about things. There's more juice in the system. This is a time of creativity and of up-leveling. So if you can schedule a field trip where kids are going to need to walk a long distance, and you can do it on the moon as it's increasing in size, why not?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Also, they might get a little, and you, and they might get a little cray-cray on the full moon.
When they were always saying that, like, oh, it must be a full moon.
Exactly.
But to really understand it, to really dissect this and truly incorporate this into your teaching, outdoor teaching practice is really beautiful. It's merging that, the science with sort of the, I don't even want to call it woo-woo. It's just really understanding the earth.
Yeah. Yes. The fact that we are part of nature and the moon is affecting us. So do the cool, do the exciting stuff as the moon gets bigger, as it waxes. And then once the moon is full, you know what it'll begin to do. It'll begin to wane. And that's more of an interior time. The pressures go down. We're naturally drawn more inward. So that's a more introspective. That's what we used to call in the classroom, quiet time. So see what you can manage. I know you're working with, I have more freedom with my calendar when I teach my courses. There's some correspondence with Moon Cycle. But just even noticing for yourself and others can allow you to use the science and the woo-woo to make for a smoother ride. And by the way, in hospitals, we staff extra in the emergency room.
Oh.
People in delivery and psychiatric wards during the full moon. More women's water breaks and brings babies because of those pressures. The pressure in the cerebrospinal area in the brain can increase. People who have brain imbalances can make them more imbalanced. And it can just make for cray-cray in the streets, which means the ER fills up.
Fascinating. Yeah, to have that data behind all of this information is absolutely...
It's not the same. The other place you'll notice irregularities that you might plan for is during seasonal change. We're in it now. We're moving from summer into fall. And then the other big one you're going to feel, and I know you already know what I'm going to say, is when it yields to spring and everybody's nose is running and they're very dysregulated. These are the wobbly times of the year when the patterns are shifting. And that's a time to plan to offer more stability to yourself. Mm-hmm. And to your students, as well as to just pause and acknowledge we're in the wobble of the change.
Yeah. And I think the word that you used was to notice, to just notice. If you can't get into the thick of it, to just begin that first step is to just notice and then to see where that takes you. And I think a lot of us here talk about sort of the magic when we take kids outdoors. There's sort of this magic that happens. And I almost think you are sort of filling in the gaps of what that magic and where that magic's coming from. And a lot of it's from the universe and the earth and that we are a part of all of that. Can you speak a little bit about mindfulness and meditation and how important that is for, yes, us as educators, our own self-care, but how can we also introduce mindfulness and meditation to young children as well?
I love how close together those two names are. Meditation. Please, everybody, enjoy that. It's also true about sacred and scared.
Oh, yeah.
One little typo and sacred goes to scared or scared goes to sacred. Same for meditation. This is no accident. do want to talk about that. And I just want to follow up on what you so beautifully said about the magic of going outside, whether it's sitting in the garden to have your morning tea or doing that glorious field trip where those most poorly behaved kids become the most engaged and you can see the goodness without interruption. The reason, again, the science and the woo-woo combination behind this is in nature, in the elements, earth, air, fire, and water, these four elements. And by the way, we all have an elemental nature that can be determined through pretty simply when you work with an Ayurvedic practitioner. You can learn your elemental nature, and that's a way of staying healthy, experiencing deep wellness. Those four elements, we're made of them. When we're outside, we're in direct relationship with them, and they have the most life force to offer us. And you might know this word prana, P-R-A-N-A, or if you're more in Chinese medicine, you would know the word qi, C-H-I. These are time-tested, time-honored ways of naming the energy of nature. And so all that prana, when you go outside, is going to flow to you, to your students. And that's why it's so magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of prana also in gratitude, in singing. These are things you can do inside, right? So there are other ways to build prana, but this is why we like to go outside, because then we are bathing in that life force. That can make regulation easier. The bus ride to the trailhead or to the beach out is very different from the bus ride back.
Back.
Yes, they're tired, but they have also been regulated by the presence of the elements. And you don't have to teach the elements how to regulate. They know. They're like, oh, this kid needs to be grounded. Here's some more earth for you, kiddo. Oh, this one needs to be lifted up out of that sadness of the parents' divorce. Here's some more air and sun for you, kiddo, which is why we must get our children outside. As far as the mindfulness, the meditation piece, what I can say about that is those things happen in the pauses. The velocity of life these days is a thrilling ride. I mean, I love texting you, Victoria. I love getting on an airplane and going to see whoever or go to the conference. I love that velocity. It brings me, it's action. I'm in action. And that's feeding me. And I can also then feed that back. But too much of that and we become weary. This is why permission to retreat, to create the pauses where there is space that's not holding expectation, data, information, or a deadline. It's just plain spacious.
Yeah, I think people get nervous with that space. But it also, when you're speaking, it makes me think of that, the breath in and then the breath out, and it just really having that rhythm, setting that up in terms of our nature-based classes. But just as a human being, having a breath in and a breath out and allowing ourselves the pause. Because I think we're such a go, 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 go. And giving our children the pause. I don't think we give our children the pause. They have to be in this and they have to be in this. And if they're not, they don't know what to do next. But to be bored is such a message to allow our children to be bored, to have a pause and not be doing anything.
My daughter has two young children, and we were having an adventure day this summer. And it was a little edgy because the kids were jumping off of things and doing things that you're like, okay, is this safe, right? We're so safety oriented. My daughter and I looked at each other to decide whether we should say, okay, come on down now. And my daughter looked at me and said, you know, the research says get healthy with unstructured time in nature. Let's just go over there and sit down and let them do that. So this is our little code word, unstructured time in nature. Now, as a teacher in charge of other people's children, it can't be too unstructured. But as much as you can leave that spaciousness, that will allow the life force to come in and the rest will take care of itself. With that said, a couple practical tips. I love what you said about the breath. Breath is the bridge between the body and the mind. So I'll say that again. The breath is the bridge energetically, the way the subtle body works, the non-physical self. There's a bridge between the body and the mind. It's called the breath. And this is why we can so simply regulate with the breath. Here's an easy tip. You already do it. I'll start with a story. My mother, the Hackett, four kids, pretty close together. Traditional dad, bye, I'm going to go out and, you know, maybe see you later, but probably won't be here in time to have dinner. Good luck to you. And my mom was overwhelmed a lot of the time. She used to sigh a lot. Anybody else? Can you hear your mother? And she also used to hum a lot. And I remember that about her. I remember the sounds she made. Now, as a amateur neuroscientist, which is what a good yoga teacher should be, a good teacher of Ayurveda as well, we know that sighing down-regulates the nervous system.
Yes.
Anytime we lengthen the exhale, we're down-regulating from the sympathetic nervous system. Oh my God, I feel so sorry for you. You're so stressed. Into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your parachute that gives you a soft landing. So when we lengthen the exhale, that is a way to down-regulate the nervous system and become calmer. You can do it with sighing. You can do it with your kids, with counting. I've done it with kids by, and they think this is hilarious, holding up a piece of toilet paper or a piece of paper towel and having them breathe in and then breathe out and keep it fluttering as long as they can. You do a little competition, right? How long can you keep your toilet paper fluttering with your nice long exhale?
I love that.
So try that. When I'm stressed in traffic, I might breathe in through my nose. That's inspiration. The inhaled breath lifts us and inspires us, makes us more alert. The exhale breath is expiration. It brings us back down. So that's a tip. The other tip is, and maybe many of you do this already, if you have a bell or some type of a pleasant vibrational instrument in your classroom, you can also use a xylophone, perhaps one of those small ones. There are so many beautiful products to choose from now that you use to call your children through a transition or to get them settled. That struck sound sends out a vibration. And if you've used rabbinic gong baths, singing bowls, very popular right now. Sound is so popular. This is a way, by the way, for you to practice self-care. It's because the vibrations of those instruments in the hands of skillful people will do the same thing. They will down-regulate and stabilize the nervous system.
Incredible.
So you can use those things and experiment. Do some research and see what you could bring into your classroom.
Yeah. So the final thing I wanted to talk about is you do a lot of work, not just as individuals, but do you do it in community? Can you share the essence and the importance of doing self-care or finding groups where you can actually celebrate in community?
Yeah. So I like to use, right now I'm using the term your teachers. You change your terminology all the time. Not all the time, but you wiggle around it. You
know, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to describe this. Right now I'm working with the phrase deep wellness. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you can experience, I work with people who are, I don't want to call it battling cancer. I want to use a different word, who are experiencing cancer. They're on the cancer journey, but they're experiencing deep wellness because they're learning how to flow with the daily rhythm, with the solar rhythm, with the lunar rhythm. Sounds fancy. It's not. Deep wellness exists in rhythmic living. Exists when we come together to experience it. For those of you who go to yoga class, I went to yoga class for years, but if I tried to do yoga by myself at home, I was like, how come it's not the same? You know, what? Like I love my yoga class, but when I do downward facing dog at home, I'm like, meh. And it's because there's this collective thing that's happening. And this is true if you play music or sing. Sometimes we want to walk by ourselves. But what could be better than a walk with a friend or a couple of friends when there's the co-regulation experience? Because remember, there's something between us that is more than us individually, experiencing the prana in nature. And we're just, I love to ski. I live in Colorado. I love to ski. Ski with friends, high as a kite. So this idea that we come together in wellness communities, please find some words for that.
Yeah.
Because we are, Hillary Clinton said it, I'll bring Hillary in. Together we are stronger. Together we are weller. Because there is a co-created field that arises between us. Be particular. You'll know where that field is and you'll know where it isn't. And this is part of your self-care, is to know where you can reliably go, either virtually or in real time, where you will be uplifted by the others there. If there's a place that you know of at the moment, stay home and do your own thing. Don't go where it's going to be funky, because you don't want to absorb that.
That's brilliant. It's so inspiring. And it's such a good time to be talking about this, because it's the time for this recording is the beginning of a new school year. So to talk about wellness and self-care and to really merge the kind of the spirituality piece with the scientific piece is so vital. I could talk to you all day. Is there a seed of inspiration that you would like to leave our community with?
Yeah, I want to give a practical tip. When the sun is rising, it offers us a red spectrum that resets the mitochondria in our bodies. And this is why many wellness traditions, particularly Ayurveda, recommend being out in the early morning sun. And some people call it sun gazing. You're not going to look right at the sun, but you can go out and sip your tea and don't have glasses on, even sunglasses, and just allow that low angled sun in the morning, better than evening, to come in, because it will then help set your rhythms. The same rhythms that are spinning the planets, that are allowing the leaves to come on the tree and come off the trees, the moon, all of that cosmic rhythm is what we want to be in sync with. It's called rhythmic living. So this beautiful practice of being out in the morning, maybe you're walking, maybe you're sitting on your deck. If the sun's bright, 15 minutes is great. 10 to 15 minutes is great. If it's behind the clouds, you might do 20 if you can. You're rebooting the mitochondria, the little brains, the little fires in each cell, so they can do their job. That's a solar practice. That's a let's regulate with the sun practice. I already talked about the lunar practice of just being aware of the phase of the moon. And I mentioned the seasonal practice of just noticing the qualities of the season, stay warm in the winter, stay cool in the summer, recognize that your digestion and your appetite are going to be weird during the wobbly transitions. So the inspiration, Victoria, is what you offered, which is just notice. Don't feel like you have to go out and do a bunch of fancy stuff, spend a bunch of money on sonic bells, all the things. No. Step one, notice and pause and listen. The music of the spheres is always there.
Ah, I'm just so inspired. I'm getting goosebumps. It's really fun.
Thank you all for the work you're doing. I am no longer going to work. I do work. I work from home. For years, I went into classrooms, into clinics, into ICUs and all the places. Loved it. You'll get there too. In the meantime, thank you for being in the trenches.
Oh, thank you. So where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me virtually at yogabeyondtheposes.com. And I'm sure that'll be in the notes. And I do work with, I work with individuals. I also do work with Enneagram. If you want to know about your personality structure and how it's benefiting you and maybe not benefiting you anymore, that's really important work. I do that work as well as working with your Ayurvedic constitution for deep wellness. And as Victoria mentioned, I do call together circles. I have a program called the Crone Chronicles. It's for wise women to come in and be wise together.
Oh, thank you so much. I am certain that our community will be working on their self-care for not only themselves, but also the children that are in their care. And I believe in the ripple effect. So all this wonderful, incredible energy will be hopefully rippling out into the world, into the world of education.
Thank you, Victoria, for all that you're doing. It's really beautiful and important.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our community, here's how you can get involved.
First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time. It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time,